This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2021, held at Faith Builders from August 2 through 6.
Welcome to Educating for the Kingdom Creativity. Yes, I know the schedule says something different, but this is what we're doing today. Nobody asked me what order they should be in on the schedule. I just assumed they would put them on the way they were the last time. And this is the way I've chosen to present them in. So today we'll be educating for the kingdom creativity. Tomorrow will be collaboration, working together. And we'll finish up Friday with critical thinking and send you out thinking, hopefully. So in a bit of review here, yesterday we talked about educating. Educating means, or educating for the kingdom specifically means, education is knowing about the heart of a matter, the deeper whys and wherefores, as well as the basic how-tos. And the kingdom means action. Kingdom workers don't sit around like Pharisees arguing the finer points of detail. They jump in, like Lenny, to the rescue and live and love compassionately. But as we move to consider creativity today, I'd like to start with a selection that displays uniformity and automation as an opposite of creativity. So starting with an opposite, a selection from A Wrinkle in Time. Have any of you ever read A Wrinkle in Time? A few of you, okay. This is one of my favorite selections that I've remembered ever since my middle school teacher read it when I was in school. Below them, the town was laid out in harsh angular patterns. The houses in the outskirts were all exactly alike, small square boxes painted gray. Each had a small rectangular plot of lawn in front, with a straight line of dull-looking flowers edging the path to the door. Meg had a feeling that if she could count the flowers, that there would be exactly the same number for each house. In front of all the houses, children were playing. Some were skipping rope. Some were bouncing balls. Meg felt vaguely that something was wrong with their play. It seemed exactly like children playing around any housing development at home, and yet there was something different about it. She looked at Calvin and saw that he too was puzzled. "Look," Charles Wallace said suddenly, "they're skipping and bouncing in rhythm. Everyone's doing it at exactly the same moment." This was so. As the skipping rope hit the pavement, so did the ball. As the rope curved over the head of the jumping child, the child with the ball caught the ball. Down came the ropes. Down came the balls. Over and over again. Up, down, all in rhythm, all identical, like the houses, like the path, like the flowers. Then the doors of all the houses opened simultaneously, and out came women, like a row of paper dolls. The print of their dresses was different, but they all gave the appearance of being the same. Each woman stood on the steps of her house. Each clapped. Each child with the ball caught the ball. Each child with the skipping rope folded the rope. Each child turned and walked into the house. The doors clicked shut behind them. So, like I said, I remembered that as a youngster that grabbed my imagination. Is that your picture of the perfect classroom where everything happens in rhythm at the same time? Every child does exactly the same thing at the same time. It's a clean, efficient, and yet disturbing picture. So if you're not familiar with that book, Meg was taking a journey to another, not just another place, but another place in the universe, another reality. And that's how things were there, and she was disturbed by it. So our schools do run better on efficiency, but sometimes we need to ask, run better for whom? The students who are full of energy that's being stifled, or the adults who don't want to be bothered with noise and fuss? So there is a certain amount of uniformity and order that a classroom needs in order to run smoothly with many people in it. But believe me, believe me, as a principal, I know this, but there is also a certain amount of time that needs to be allowed for creative play, for recess, art, story, and free time for younger students to read or explore and do activities that are crucial to their creative development and ability to pay attention at other times. So, what is the perfect classroom? Thank you. Consider this picture. Is there anything missing here on this picture to the perfect classroom? Anyone?
Students.
Students. Oh, people. People. People are what brings a classroom to life. People are inherently unique because God is creative. People are creative because they are made in God's image. So, we need people-centered classrooms, not product-centered, program-centered, or performance-centered. And as we learned yesterday in our compassion session, a heart of compassion for each student is crucial in educating for the kingdom. And without that compassion, you won't see each child's uniqueness, individuality, and their creativity. And for those of you that were in the afternoon workshop with us, maybe you heard this before, but I don't think all of you were there. So I'll say it again, we're going to move on to creative teachers here. And I read a quote from a girl who said, her good teachers were all different, but her bad teachers were all the same because they were predictable and their speech was like the balloon speech out in front in cartoons, not personal. So we're thinking about creativity. Even the teacher should be creative if we want creative students. So here are stories of three creative teachers. The first, just quotes about them. Miss Jessica Bitsaba Contreras Fuentes, although I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly. A student says about her, she's the most amazing and creative teacher that I have ever had. Her soul is full of happiness. Another teacher, Miss Valerie De Torres. Miss De Torres walks around and offers one-on-one and small group instruction. And Mrs. Michelle Blackwell. The student says, I personally credit this to her character. She's funny, she's kind, she's very helpful, most important in a teacher, and she's inspiring. Now, all three of these teachers, by the way, have won awards for being creative. But I want you to notice the descriptives that the students used about these teachers. They seem to me to be all character statements. So let's look at some of the words. Here we have happy. Her soul is full of happiness. Here we have walking around and offers one-on-one. Can you do that? And finally, funny, kind, helpful. Can you do that? So, if you want to be creative, you can be. It starts with who the teacher is, because we're made in God's image. So the next time you're tempted to say, I'm not creative, now that art teacher down the hall, she's creative. Well, be honest, you could be more creative if you put the work in and apply your mind and heart. Just like redemption into God's image is hard work, creativity is usually hard work. 2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. You can be creative if you put the work in. So, this next slide is about work. Some quotes here. Thomas Edison is credited with, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And Sir Ken Robinson says, creativity is the process of having original ideas that have value. So this is a definition for you of creativity from Ken Robinson. As we're talking about creativity today, if you wonder to yourself what creativity is, consider this definition, the process of having original ideas that have value. So you might think that creative teachers are just brilliant. They wake up in the morning and they have ideas just pouring out of their head. And some people are more like that than others. So there is a certain amount of talent involved, But creativity also takes hard work. So don't sit around waiting for creativity to happen. Seek it out and put the work in. Our faculty book this year that I gave to the faculty to read that we'll be discussing is called Grit by Angela Duckworth. Perhaps you've heard of it, but the basic premise is grit is more important than talent. She studied what determines, for instance, why people drop out of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Every year, 14,000 apply, and only 1,200 get in. So it's quite the whittling down process to get into West Point. You need good SAT scores and a personal recommendation from a congressman or a president. It doesn't hurt. But of those who get in, 1 in 5 end up dropping out before they graduate. Why? And she posits, is because they don't have grit. Grit is more important than IQ. So there is talent involved. We all have different talents and different giftings, and some things come naturally. But creativity is a process. If you have grit and stick to it, you can find ideas to do with your students and be creative. Think of good, exciting science demonstrations and experiments that all students love. 3 words to describe these. Time, time, time. So I hope you enjoy my talks this week, but don't ask me how much time it took to prepare. Even though I gave these talks before, it took time to go back over them and prepare again. I remember Kyle Lehman, maybe he walked out now, who I went through TAP with here, and he did a science demonstration with a dramatic bed of nails. So maybe you've laid on the bed of nails already at the Science Museum. Well, he made one. All you need is plywood and nails, but it takes time to pound those nails in. And then another bed on the top, and then cement blocks on top of that, and then a sledgehammer on top of that. It was quite dramatic. But that took a lot of time to prepare that. So decide what is worth taking the time for. It takes time to be creative. So you're mostly all young teachers if you're in this session. So harness that energy and do something new this year. You can be creative because God created you in His image to be creative. Some of it depends on your creativity. Other times, students need to be bored into creativity. Have you ever read Bored, Nothing to Do by Peter Spear? Ah, you should have that book in your classroom. Bored, Nothing to Do. It's a little children's book. It's mostly pictures. And these boys are bored, so they create something. And I'll let you find that if you're interested. Sometimes we need to give children space and time to be creative. Maybe sometimes teachers are too busy doing the same old thing to be creative. But I hope after today, Jesus will inspire you to take time to be creative, because it's something that's needed in our classrooms. Children are naturally curious and creative, but sometimes by the time they graduate, and this has been studied and documented, their curiosity and creativity has declined as they've gotten older rather than increased. So let it be the other way in your classroom. So the message is, if you haven't gotten it by now, creativity takes work. Are you willing to work? So we want creative students, and we've learned you should be creative, work on that. What can you do in the space in between here? And again, today I'll be forming the rest of our time around these 3 questions. How did Jesus teach with creativity? How do others teach with creativity? And how can I teach with creativity? So first of all, how did Jesus teach with creativity? The first point I have is he used object lessons. He often used object lessons to communicate concrete truth to his listeners. He washed the feet of the disciples to teach servant leadership. He called a little child to him and then used this to discuss childlike faith to his listeners. He described unselfish giving after watching a widow drop 2 small coins into the temple offering. So these were just opportunities he took to do something and then discuss with his disciples. He often just used the objects at hand around him to teach people. When he was by a well, he used water. After he fed 5,000 people, he talked to them about the bread of life. When he was on a fishing boat, he said the kingdom was like a fishing net. He told his listeners to consider the lilies, the sparrows, and the hairs on their head. He referred to a fig tree, a mustard tree, yeast, salt, a vineyard, money, and other things from everyday life. When he spoke about a vineyard, he was probably near a vineyard. And when he said, consider the sparrows, there were probably sparrows flying around. And when he taught about the parable of the sower, it's no stretch of the imagination to think there was probably a sower in the next field to where Jesus was. So creative teachers are always hauling things in from home for demonstrations and science, of course, but also devotions, Mexican food for social studies, a news article to illustrate the importance of using a comma or the decimal point. Creative teachers are always using what's on hand. Another thing Jesus did was said shocking or strange things. For example, Jesus didn't really mean we have to rip out our eyes and amputate our hands for causing us to sin in Matthew 5, or else all Christians would be blind and amputees. He also didn't mean that the people he was speaking to literally had logs in their eyes. He was making a point. Jesus said things that shocked people and exaggerated the truth to emphasize his point. Also, John 8, he wrote in the sand. He stooped down and wrote in the sand. And another time he spit in the dirt and used that, which was, I would think, somewhat shocking and strange, at least to our culture, if you would spit. So I don't know if that's a good one to emulate in your classroom, but it's at least an example of something Jesus did. Was different, got the people's attention. And finally, parables and stories. Think about the parable of the prodigal son. Jesus could have taught, God loves you so much that he will welcome you back no matter how much sin you've committed. But he didn't just say that. He told the story of the prodigal son. Or the Good Samaritan. This story cuts to the heart of what it is to be a Christian. Can a preacher be late to church to preach on love because he stopped to help someone? This one, incidentally, thinking of creativity, something I've done with my 7th and 8th graders already, when we read this selection, and then I read it to them in another version, quite different, and then inspire them to write a modern day story of the Good Samaritan. So set it in a modern setting with cars or whatever, so with modern travel, and write your own story of the Good Samaritan. It's such a classic that cuts to the heart of what it means to be Christian. See if each student can come up with their own Good Samaritan story. And finally, the unforgiving servant. Forgiveness, again, is crucial or central to the heart of what it means to be a Christian. We forgive as we are forgiving. Jesus could have said, be very forgiving. If I forgive you, forgive other people. But he didn't just say that. He told a story. How can you hold bitterness over someone else when you've been forgiven? And we immediately identify, how could that other person go out and wring the other person's neck when he was forgiven? Remember from yesterday, compassion. Our ability to have compassion often depends on our view of how much God has forgiven us. Moving on now to how do others teach with creativity? Speaking of the Good Samaritan story, I'll tell a little story here about Good Samaritan discipline. I remember one of my first years as principal when I used that story to solve a problem. So we had a substitute in, and not in my room, in one of the elementary classrooms. And the students went out to lunch recess, and I guess the substitute wasn't on recess duty, so she was in her classroom and observed something's different than it was this morning. Ah, the desks are moved. So she came to me in the office and she said, students all moved their desks. And I knew some of the ongoing issues in that classroom. And the teacher had lined the rows up. I don't remember exactly anymore how it was, but boys had to sit beside girls in order to calm things down. Sometimes there are strategies needed in seating arrangements. And so the students had eaten their lunches and then casually stopped back by the classroom on their, unbeknownst to the substitute, and changed their seats so that the guys were back beside the guys and the girls by the girls, and they created different aisles than what were there, and then they went out to play. So what am I gonna do? Well, I told the substitute, you just act normal. Stories after recess, just pretend you're getting ready for story time, and I'll show up. So I thought a bit, and you know, neighbors, the ongoing issue of being neighborly, who is my neighbor, came to mind. So I came in and they came back to their seats, their new arrangements, and I told them or summarized the story of the Good Samaritan, asked them if they remembered that story, and then I invited them to go back to their neighbors the way it was supposed to be. So be creative in your discipline. If your students know exactly what you're going to do when they misbehave, they might weigh whether it's worth it. Maybe it is worth it this time. But if they're not sure what you're going to come up with next time, they might think twice about misbehaving. Another story about teaching with creativity, Grace Living Center. This is from a book called Out of Our Minds, in a chapter called Learning to Be Creative. In most education systems, you know, we're age segregated. So this selection deals with the idea of having students interact with someone from a different age group. And reading here from the book. For several years, I acted as a mentor to a statewide program of creativity in Oklahoma. And I'll skip down here. At the center of the partnership is the Book Buddies program, in which members of the home spend time one-on-one listening to the children read and read to them. The results have been remarkable. Okay, I skipped a little bit here. The school has a retirement home across the street. The supervisor approached the school district to ask whether they could participate in the reading program. And so they came up with a buddy program in which the young children go across to the retirement home every day and they practice reading to the older people and the older people read to them. So it mixes up the generations. The results have been remarkable. Over 70% of the children leave the program reading at grade 3 or higher, outperforming many other children in the district. And then every now and then, the children have to be told that one of the book buddies will not be coming back again because they have passed on. So at this young age, the children are learning too about the natural cycles of life and death. So this is a story from Oklahoma where they're using the retirement home across the street to help with reading. You often need someone else to, or you wish, I wish we had more people to listen to these children read, because the more one-on-one it is, the more accountability and the more practice they have. Well, there's a whole bunch of old people sitting across the street with nothing to do. Let's partner up. And not only did it meet needs on both sides, but actually improved the students' reading scores in their testing. So be creative. You could bring, maybe you don't have a retirement home across the street, but you could bring some older people in from your church community who may be retired sitting around home and would like to come in and help out somehow, even if it's just listening to the children read. Vegetable on the desk. Use mystery as a challenge. One teacher was out shopping and bought a bag of radishes. Maybe they were on sale, I don't know. She put one on each student desk before math class. Teacher, what are these for? She taught the lesson and said, well, what do you think the radishes are for? They came up with all kinds of ideas. You could divide them into fractions and figure out surface area, et cetera, et cetera. Good. That was all she had planned. to make them think. Faked excuses. Isn't it remarkable, I thought, how the students whined and said it was hard putting 200 words together on any subject, but when they forged excuse notes, they were brilliant. The notes I had could be turned into an anthology of great American excuses. They were samples of talent never mentioned in song, story, or study. How could I have ignored this treasure stove? Here are some of the best ones. This is from Frank McCourt. The stove caught fire and the wallpaper went up and the fire department kept us out of the house all night. So excuses for why they didn't get their work done. His sister's dog ate his homework and I hope it chokes him. We were evicted from our apartment and the mean sheriff said if my son kept yelling for his notebook, he'd have us all arrested. So the writers of these notes didn't realize that honest excuse notes to the school were usually dull. Peter was late because the alarm clock didn't go off. One day, I typed out a dozen excuse notes and distributed them to my senior classes. The students read them silently. Mr. McCourt, who wrote these? One boy said. You did, I said. I omitted names to protect the guilty. They're supposed to be written by parents, but you and I know the real authors. Yes, Mikey? So what are we supposed to do? This is the first class to study the art of the excuse note. The first class ever to practice writing them. You're so lucky to have a teacher like me who has taken your best writing and turned it into a subject worthy of study. Everyone smiled as I went on. You didn't settle for the old alarm clock story. You used your imaginations. One day you might be writing excuses for your own children when they're late or absent. So, try it now. Imagine you have a 15-year-old who needs an excuse for falling behind in English. Let it rip. Moving on to how can I teach with creativity, here are five steps to creative teaching, and then I have more practical examples for how you can teach with creativity. So step number one, connect your interests with your teaching. And I know there might be some overlap here with those of you in the afternoon workshops, some things I said yesterday, but hopefully if you hear them again, you'll actually remember them. Sandra, a high school English teacher and recent National Teacher of the Year Award winner, said, outside pursuits always factor into your thinking about your classroom or your students. I think that we teach who we are, and I know I teach who I am. Whatever it is that interests you, that energy manifests itself creativity in the fabric of the classroom. So again, she was a National Teacher of the Year Award winner, and her advice to you is, we teach who we are. So whatever interests you, make sure that shows up somehow creatively in the classroom. So I'm a firefighter, a volunteer firefighter. So I might tell stories or about firefighting, or in math and science, use example for firefighting. Atmospheric pressure in science. So how high can a fire truck actually pump water? Is there any limit? To the top of the World Trade Center? And I mentioned this yesterday in Bible class in nonconformity. Fire gear, it protects me. So a year or so ago, a teenager went back inside to try to save her mother. Fortunately, she made it back out, but her lungs suffered. Within minutes, and I lived right down the street from where this happened, within minutes I showed up and went in fire gear. I survived my lungs, as far as I know, don't have any lasting damage today. What was the difference? Okay, it was this fire gear almost killed her, but I went in and came back out. So we wear fire gear for a reason. So as Anabaptists, why do we wear different clothing? Is it to protect us, to set us apart? And that's an analogy and a discussion I had with my Bible students. Number two, link lessons to the real world, to real world learning. One elementary teacher described how she often started the school day with a sky watch during which kids collected weather data. When the first bell would ring, they would spread out in the school courtyard. We'd talk about the clouds, the humidity, the weather, the wind direction, and collect scientific data. Later, the kids would go online and send the data to scientists at NASA. It was a project going on all over the world where kids were sending Skywatch information to scientists. So maybe you're not connected to NASA, but you could at least have them, you know, in math class when you're studying numbers, have them studying the thermometer every morning. What is it actually outside? Or in math class, you're studying the Pythagorean theorem. Well, let's go out and see if the corners of the volleyball court are actually square. Collect insects in science class. Connect in math class. How many cement blocks will you actually need? I remember being at a teacher's institute a number of years ago where they brought a businessman in, and he urged us as math teachers, make them work hard and don't let them make lots of mistakes. Hold them accountable and tell them stories. And then he told a story of how somebody in his business made a miscalculation and several extra tractor trailer loads of cement blocks were hauled 100 miles away where they weren't needed on a job site. And then they had to be hauled back. So in math class, these little math mistakes are, oh, red mark, okay, whatever. But when you get to the real world, you make that little math mistake, boss isn't going to be happy. One that happened to me in Harrisburg, the foreman miscalculated how much wire we needed in the high rise to get from the fifth floor to the first. And once we dropped the wire, that was it. There was no pulling it back up as it was Cat 5 communication wire. And we did pull a little bit, but I mean, it didn't move on the other end, so the wire stretched a bit. So we dropped it all out, took it back to the shop, and told the boss, we're going to need more wire. So he's not happy. These are the real world situations that are going to show up if you don't know how to do math. So tell those stories from your life or find them from other people. Or some of you heard my wife talk about the 10% off coupon at the store. The younger ones have to pull out their phones or their calculators, but some people can figure out 10% off in their head. So give students those examples. Number three, cultivate a creative mindset. If you're a teacher, you're always a teacher. You're never quite off duty. Adam, a middle school math teacher, noted, I'll often just be doing something, or I'll see something happen, and I'll think, well, how can I relate to that to teaching? I'm always on the lookout for ideas. I've trained my mind to look at something and think about how it applies to teaching. So you're always a teacher, even in the summer. You can be collecting ideas as well as books and things to spice up your teaching. Creative teachers work hard to glean ideas with their antenna and file them away for future use. Number four, value collaboration. Anytime you have multiple brains focusing on one idea or one goal, the potential is exponential. You can start brainstorming ideas and bounce them off of each other. The difficult part is making sure you have time for this. You probably won't come up with all of your great ideas on your own. They're usually an adaptation of someone else's idea. So value friends and feedback from other teachers. Brainstorm with them, and when they tell you it will never work, go for it. Number five, take intellectual risks. Intellectual risk can be defined as engaging in behaviors that place the learner at risk of making mistakes or appearing less competent than others, or things that lack certainty in the prospect of loss or failure. So many of us don't try new things because it might not work. Think of all the things we wouldn't have today if someone wouldn't have taken intellectual risk. Mark, a middle school math science teacher, explained, creativity needs to be about the ability to make mistakes, to learn from those. When students see that kind of risk-taking, I think it helps them understand how to do things well themselves. Ultimately, what students will gain from your class is not necessarily all content knowledge. Often, it's how you approach things. So, be willing to try new things. Take responsibility for the success of your classroom. How can I teach with creativity? So here I have a list of practical things that you could adapt or do. For instance, first, allow students to doodle or write about what you're reading. And you might have to teach the difference between creative writing or journaling, brainstorming, flow, opposed to specific writing assignments that need to be written well with good sentence structure and good penmanship. So you might have to teach your students, there are times when you need to write well and rework your writing and edit it before you hand it in to me. Other times, I'm inviting you to take notes, doodle, write, draw. If you like drawing better, someone could draw instead of, or doodle instead of writing things down. So this could be done just while you're reading a selection to them, even in story time, etc. Be sure to use different voices or accents when reading. Practice your skill of oral reading as a teacher. Dramatic voice. Try the accents. Make your own if you don't know exactly how to do that accent. Match your voice to what's happening in the story. If they're happy, talk in a happy voice. If they're sad, keep it sad. If something is hot, that's different than cold. If it's sizzling or whizzling, or if Tigger bounced, or if Eeyore says, probably not, or Roo says, did you see me swimming? Try to match your voice to what's happening. Dress and costume. That could be complete or simply a hat. Say, Lincoln's stovepipe hat. Bring an object. It may be related. I have a piece of coral in my room on my windowsill that I got from the Caribbean. So anytime in science or other classes I want to mention coral, oh, I have a piece of coral. Do you know what coral is? Probably not, because they're living in Pennsylvania. So here it is. Pass it around. Look at it. I also have coca and cocoa leaves for when needed. Difference between cocaine and chocolate. Radishes, or something unrelated, like I said with the radishes, or just something for interest, a stuffed animal that you animate somehow, add to your class. Or take a penny. What can you observe from a penny? I heard about one teacher in, not sure what the class would be, archaeology or something, and his students observed the penny and then came up with about 20 observations they could make about this past society. So they were pretending they were 500 years from now. What could you learn about America from studying a penny? Well, they had a writing system, and they valued farming because there was a little bit of wheat on the penny, and so on. Environment. Turn your room into the environment of what you're learning about. Well, maybe not totally, but let's say insects. It's time to have an insect bulletin board, make collections, have insect things around the room. Or we're studying the jungle. How can you bring something in to make your room look like a jungle? Or a specific country. We're studying Latin America right now, so we're hanging things up from Latin America. How about a travel brochure? This would be if the students are writing, need to write a report, say, especially about a country in geography class. Have them write it as an advertisement, as it were, for traveling to this country instead of just simply doing a report. I'm doing a report on this country. I'll write a travel brochure and persuade me why I should go to that country, which would require them to know something about that country. Try foreign foods, especially when studying another country. Tell stories. Our brains are hardwired to think and express in terms of beginning, middle, and end. It's how we understand the world. Storytelling is the oldest form of teaching. Stories give children the answers to the biggest questions of life. Creation, the afterlife. Stories define us, shape us, control us, and make us. Not every human culture in the world is literate, but every human culture tells stories. Here's a story about a teacher who drove home a point by using a common object. He picked up his coat that was hanging on a chair and said to his students, "Well, we all know how to put on a coat. But imagine that I am a South Sea Islander who never saw a coat before. Now tell me how to put it on." Not one of the class was able to give wholly correct directions. So, this little exercise could be an unforgettable exercise in clear thinking and the accurate use of words. Allow choice. Choice gives ownership. Guided choices are okay as well with options. Like, do you want to do a poster, a written report, an oral report? Anytime a student has a choice in how I'm going to do my report, they feel a little more ownership than if you just tell them to write 500 words. Finally, have students create as much as possible. Instead of filling all the time with worksheets and listening, have them create something about what you're learning and then hang it up on the walls of the classroom so that if someone would come into your classroom, they could tell what your students are learning. If school is too predictable, spice it up, change things up. But remember, we don't eat spices by themselves. They enhance the entree. So creativity is something that, it's a method that you put into your teaching. You can't necessarily be creative just to be creative by itself. And some more ideas here, some starter phrases. Devise your own way to get to the moon or catch a mouse. This could be in writing, for instance. List ways to develop. How many ways are there to use a paperclip? Or make a one-of-a-kind thing. We do in 7th and 8th every other year. One year they create a balloon popper machine, which is certainly one-of-a-kind. And another year they create a toothpick bridge. So projects where theirs is the only one like theirs. And different points of view are crucial as well to compassion. What would happen if the South had won? What would happen if there was no Thomas Edison? What are some unusual uses for a car? What are the opinions from a different point of view? What about the Amish point of view, the Russian point of view, the North Korean point of view, the Muslim point of view? Write or consider that as a creative exercise to help understand about the other. And finally, one way to learn how things work is to take them apart. What causes the problem will lead us how to fix it. I don't know where this leak is coming from, so I need to take the pipe apart to figure out. So in reverse brainstorming, instead of coming up with ways to reduce pollution, come up with ways to increase pollution, which will help you understand how to reduce pollution. What if we increased our consumption of water? What if we promoted more war instead of minimizing war? This helps us understand the causes of war, etc. And I'll finish with one more story of a creative punishment. There are teachers, and then there are educators. So in one school, there was trouble with the girls using a lot of lipstick and applying it to the bathroom mirrors with their lips. They were told no, but they continued to do it. So the principal came up with a creative idea. The principal took the janitor in to the restroom to show the girls how hard it was to remove the lipstick. He dipped the squeegee in the toilet and wiped the mirror clean. That took care of the problem. Be an educator. Remember, you are created in the image of God. You can be creative because you are a new creature in Christ.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.